A former U.S. State Department official says country's senior officials willfully ignore Israel's war crimes in Gaza and stifled dissent over arming the regime. Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in to World News. Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip enters now its 41st day as the regime continues pounding blockaded territory with airstrikes. Israel is now pressing ahead with a raid on Al-Shifa Hospital, which has turned into a focal point of deadly raids. According to Gaza's health officials, Israeli army bulldozers and tanks destroyed parts of the southern and western entrances to the medical complex. Regime's military has confirmed its raid on the facility, which started Wednesday and is still going on. The hospital officials and doctors say complex water reserves have been nearly depleted, putting the lives of patients and people sheltering there at risk. They also rejected Israeli claims of delivering medical aid to Al-Shifa, saying regime forces, in fact, are deliberately sabotaging the existing equipment there. Israeli forces entered the complex, claiming it was atop a military command center of the Hamas resistance movement. Hamas, however, categorically denies the regime's allegations, saying Israel is lying about finding weapons at the complex.
The Israeli carnage in the Gaza Strip continues to rack up deaths, especially women and children. But Israel is also impacted by its genocidal war when it comes to its international standing, putting into doubt its legitimacy. Ireland's opposition party has strongly blasted the regime, accusing it of committing barbaric and cowardly war crimes.
The world sees Israeli actions for what they are: barbaric, hateful, cowardly war crimes.
Strong words from the leader of Ireland's opposition party. The Brazilian president relayed his disgust on Israeli crimes when it came to hospitals being targeted.
I'd never heard of children being the preferred victims of a war. The number of women and children who have already died and the number of children who have gone missing is unheard of in any other war.
Hospitals have become a focal point of the war. The Israeli military shared video and photographs showing what it said were weapons stored by Hamas in the basement of a children's hospital in Gaza, where it also said hostages appear to have been held.
And we also found signs that indicate that Hamas held hostages here. This is currently under our investigation, but we also have intelligence that verifies it.
Currently under our investigation is another way of Israel saying that it is not sure. At the same time, it is trying to portray itself as a good Samaritan by delivering fuel to the hospitals. But this amount of fuel is just a drop in the bucket, way too short of what hospitals need. Yet Israel got a boost on its war efforts when the U.S. President Joe Biden said that hospitals in the Gaza Strip must be protected.
Well, I have not been reluctant in expressing my concerns what's going on. And it's my hope and expectation that there will be less intrusive action relative to the hospital.
Biden said he was hoping for less intrusive action by Israel. That was another way of saying that he supported Israel's military operation against the hospitals.
Israeli genocidal war has not only claimed civilian life, but it has also had some political ramifications. Mass protests continue damaging Israel's world standing, while politicians are also being axed over their pro-Israel views.
The more Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip continues, the more it will come at a cost for Israel and its supporters. The Israeli foreign minister gave his idea of a timeline of when the war may end. He said that Israel has between 2 and 3 weeks left before international pressure intensifies.
Ceasefire now!
Before it intensifies? By many accounts, that threshold has been passed already, evident through the mass worldwide protests. But the real question remains, what are Israel's plans for Palestinians? A host of Israeli officials have made statements recently which reveal what those plans may be. Israeli Minister Smotrich said on X that he supports voluntary migration of Palestinians in Gaza as the right humanitarian solution. Dani Danan, former ambassador to the UN, and Ram Bin Barak, former deputy director of the Mossad, published a commentary in the Wall Street Journal suggesting moving some people of Gaza to nations that will accept them. And the former director of Israel's spy agency, Shin Bet, who is currently serving as the Minister of Agriculture, said that Tel Aviv was rolling out a Nakba in the Gaza Strip. Let's not forget, Israel has denied that a Nakba ever took place. Furthermore, in 2011, Israel enacted a Nakba law that authorized the withdrawal of state funds from organizations that discussed the Nakba.
Qatar has called for an international investigation into Israeli forces' attacks on medical facilities in the besieged Gaza Strip, denouncing the move as a war crime. Qatari Foreign Ministry said an investigation, which should include the United Nations, must probe the targeting of hospitals by regime forces. It added, Doha considers Israel's attacks on Gaza's hospitals a blatant violation of international law. Qatar also called on the international community to take swift and decisive measures to hold the regime accountable and prevent further crimes targeting civilians. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, Israeli genocide has so far killed 11,500 civilians, including at least 4,710 children, along with 3,160 women. Nearly 30,000 people have also been wounded. The Director General of the World Health Organization has denounced Israel's recent incursion into Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says Israeli regime's restricting access to vital fuel and aid, exacerbating already dire conditions and hindering the operation of essential medical infrastructure.
Israel's military incursion into Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City is totally unacceptable. Hospitals are not battlegrounds. We are extremely worried for the safety of staff and patients. Protecting them is paramount. WHO has lost contact with health workers at Al-Shifa Hospital. But one thing is clear. Under international humanitarian law, health facilities, health workers, ambulances, and patients must be safeguarded and protected against all acts of war. Earlier today, a truck with 23,000 liters of fuel entered Gaza, but Israel has restricted its use to only transporting aid from Rafah. At least 120,000 liters a day are needed to operate hospital generators, ambulances.
Lebanon's Hezbollah movement continues targeting Israeli positions along the Lebanese border areas in support of Palestinian resistance in Gaza. The movement said in several statements it fired rockets and missiles at seven Israeli military sites on Wednesday. It said attacks directly hit their targets, causing casualties among regime forces. A number of the Israeli military vehicles were also destroyed. Now, Hezbollah and Israeli troops have been engaging in direct clashes since the war on Gaza broke out October 7th, movement says attacks against Israel will continue until it stops its war crimes against Gazans. The UN Security Council has called for an extended humanitarian pause in the Gaza Strip, breaking its silence now for a first time since the Israeli war on Gaza broke out. The resolution drafted by Malta was adopted with 12 votes in favor, while the U.S., Britain, and Russia abstained. They call for urgent and extended humanitarian pauses and corridors throughout Gaza for a sufficient number of days to allow aid to reach civilians. Following the Security Council session, the Palestinian ambassador Riyad Mansour told reporters the resolution is a small step in the right direction. The Council had previously tried to adopt a resolution on the Gaza war, but to no avail. Four drafts failed back in October, pitting Russia and China on one side against the U.S. on the other. Faced with the Council's inability to act, the U.N. General Assembly adopted a non-binding text late last month calling for an immediate humanitarian truce in Gaza. Iran's foreign minister stresses the important role that the International Committee of the Red Cross can play in the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Hossein Amir Abdollahian told the president of the ICRC in Geneva that organization can play an effective role in the delivery of humanitarian aid and release of Israeli captives. He said Israel is hindering efforts to secure captives' release despite Hamas' willingness for a swap. The minister also referred to Iran's diplomatic efforts regarding the humanitarian issues in Gaza. For her part, Mirjana Spoljaric hailed the timing of the visit amid growing concerns about the situation in Gaza. She described the mission of the ICRC as sensitive and difficult. Now, Tehran blames the U.S. for the dire situation in the besieged enclave.
The humanitarian situation in Gaza is so regrettable. Unfortunately, the United States is sending all types of weapons to Tel Aviv on a daily basis, including phosphorus weapons and prohibited weapons via Cyprus or directly from all their bases in the region.
During his trip to Geneva, the foreign minister also met the UN Undersecretary for Humanitarian Affairs and called for immediate action to stop the Israeli war. Amir Abdollahian insists Rafah border crossing be reopened to let in much-needed humanitarian aid to Gazans. Iran has vehemently rejected a Canadian-drafted UN General Assembly resolution over the human rights situation in the Islamic Republic as biased and politically motivated. Iran's deputy ambassador to the UN described Canada's move as hypocritical, adding exploitation of human rights for political motives should concern all UN members. Zahra Ershadi noted, while Canada assumes a moral high ground to castigate others, it's turned a blind eye itself to the annual discovery of thousands of bodies of indigenous children on its soil. She also enumerated Israel's crimes against women and children and its ongoing genocidal war on Gaza, citing U.S.'s full support for apartheid regime of Israel. The Iranian envoy criticized selective targeting of certain countries on human rights grounds in line with political interests. She stressed the world body must rather adopt an impartial and unbiased approach to genuinely address human rights violations on a global scale. The administration of the U.S. President Joe Biden is facing scathing criticism over its unbridled support for Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Former State Department official says domestic policy concerns are leading U.S. officials willfully to ignore, quote, Israeli war crimes and stifle dissent over arming Tel Aviv. Josh Paul says many officials are disturbed by actions of the Israeli military but have to turn a blind eye to the rules governing arms transfers to the regime. He says many government officials, including some very senior level officials, share the same opinion but are unwilling to say it in public because they fear they'll lose their jobs. Paul quit his post last month over Washington's support for Tel Aviv. A leaked memo obtained by an American news website, Axios, revealed over 100 U.S. government workers say Israel is committing war crimes. They believe Biden's support for the regime makes him complicit in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Maldivian politician and activist Muad Mohammed Zaki is of the opinion, although the Israeli lobby has a strong impact on U.S. politics, increased public pressure calling for a ceasefire is forcing Joe Biden to retreat from a strong pro-Israel stance.
I think when it comes to U.S. politics, everyone has to understand that the IPAC, the Israeli lobby in the U.S., is one of the strongest. And they have allowed politicians that are on the pro-Israel and basically what we can say now is pro-genocide to be able to be elected into representatives. So even though they get voted in by the people of by American people, American voters, it doesn't mean that when it comes to foreign policy, they would actually care about what American voters think. However, this has actually changed this current war, this ongoing war, where there's so much of destruction, so much of genocide. It is changing the public opinion. And because of that, I think there is a big understanding within the American political atmosphere that, hey, look, we have to do something. And that is why I believe you can see that Joe Biden has been doing everything he can to try to get Israel to finish this genocide as fast as possible. You know, everyone knows it's a genocide, but Joe Biden keeps giving excuses and claiming they have helped this much of Gazans for medical treatment or whatever. The world does not care about that. The world cares about stopping this and putting Israel to account under international law and going after every politician in America who has supported this, sent weapons, knowing that these weapons are going to be dropped on children, including nurses, doctors, teachers, and even human rights NGOs.
In the UK, nearly a third of Labour Party lawmakers have defied their leader to back Gaza ceasefire motions. Move further reveals divisions within the party over Britain's approach to Israel's devastating war on the Gaza Strip. On Wednesday, 56 Labour lawmakers voted along the Scottish National Party in favor of two ceasefire motions at the House of Commons. The voters included several high-profile MPs. Labour leader Keir Starmer threatened to sack any shadow minister who will support the motions. This came despite the fact a majority of British people have been calling for immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Motion put forth by the Scottish Party called for an end to the collective punishment of the Palestinian people while demanding that the government work toward a ceasefire. Concurrent with the vote, people gathered outside Parliament in a show of support for Palestinians in Gaza. They called on lawmakers to represent them by backing a ceasefire in this conflict.
I just hope that they make the choice that the people clearly want. I think I've read online that up to 10 to 22% of the UK are on the side of ceasefire. So how is it even a debate? Like, this is what, if they represent us, this is what they should be.
Here today for the sake of humanity, for the sake of dignity that is still left in the world, and empathy for our brothers and sisters in Gaza, for the sake of doing good in the world, because I refuse to let people die and do nothing about it. And I think everyone here today feels that, and feels a great deep sense of empathy and love that just isn't being shown in our government at all.
That's a wrap for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Leader's remarks at meeting with pupils and students on the occasion of 4th of November. Wednesday, 1st of November 2023, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with thousands of school pupils and university students on the eve of the National Students' Day and the National Day of Fighting Global Arrogance, celebrated annually on 4th of November each year. The meeting took place at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya in Tehran. In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and point of views expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. Wednesday, 1st of November, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with thousands of school pupils and university students on the eve of the National Students' Day and the National Day of Fighting Global Arrogance, celebrated annually on 4th of November each year. 4th of November is an important and decisive day in Iranian history. On this day in 1964, the founder of the Islamic Republic, the late Imam Khomeini, was exiled to Iraq because of his opposition to the Shah's regime, which had capitulated to the Americans. That is, all American personnel serving in Iran had been granted legal immunity from prosecution, and thus no Iranian court of law could try them. Imam Khomeini's opposition to this capitulation was the reason for his exile. Also, on 4th of November 1978, that in the tumultuous days of the Iranian People's Revolution, the Shah's security forces shot and martyred a number of university students who were protesting opposite the main entrance to Tehran University. Also, on 4th of November 1979, the American embassy in Tehran, known as the Den of Espionage, was overrun and captured by Iranian university students following the path of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul. The U.S. embassy was in reality a spying and espionage center against the Iranian nation, and top secret and confidential documents captured by Iranian students and put on public display showed clearly what was going on inside this den of espionage. According to the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the first two events on 4th of November were blows delivered by the United States against the Iranian nation, and the third event was an Iranian blow against the United States. Commenting further on the takeover of the U.S. den of espionage in Tehran, Ayatollah Khamenei said, 10 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, on 4th of November 1979, students entered the U.S. embassy, took control of it, and uncovered the secrets and hidden documents in this embassy. The United States was disgraced. This was our blow. It was the Iranian nation's blow against the United States. So what I want to say is that you, the young people of today, need to have analysis of different matters. Merely having emotions is not enough. You need to analyze the core of the Islamic Revolution. You need to analyze the sacred defense, the 8 years of imposed war. You need to analyze the various events that took place in the 1980s. The leader added, the Americans themselves attribute their hostility towards the Iranian nation to the issue of the embassy, and some people follow them and repeat those same things. The Americans claim the reason for imposing sanctions on Iran, the reason they treat us badly, the reason they create problems for Iran, and the reason for America's hostility towards Iran can be traced back to the seizure of the U.S. embassy in Tehran. Both the Americans and their followers inside the country claim this. Ayatollah Khamenei poignantly added, but this is a big lie. That is not the case. 26 years before the events that took place at the U.S. embassy in November of 1979, in fact, in August of 1953, the U.S. overthrew an independent nationalist government in Iran that was not affiliated to the United States. Therefore, America's hostility towards the Islamic Republic, towards the Iranian nation, has nothing to do with the issue of the takeover of the U.S. embassy. Consider the documents that were found in the embassy. As you know, the students went in and brought the documents out. A large number of these documents had been shredded by the Americans. The students sat down and patiently stuck these pieces of paper together. These documents now amount to 70 to 80 volumes of books. These documents show that from the very first days of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the American embassy was a center of conspiracy, espionage, and spying against the Iranian nation. The leader added, they even planned coup d'etats at the U.S. embassy. They wanted to stage a coup d'etat against the Islamic Revolution. They wanted to devise a scheme to start a civil war in Iran. They tried to launch a civil war in Iran's border provinces. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader said the issue of Western influence in Iran started with British. First of all, they came to Iran starting in the 1800s. They infiltrated the Qajar government at the time and gradually expanded their influence. The goal of the British was to do the same thing in Iran which they had done earlier in India. You know that India was in the clutches of the British for about 150 years. The British took the life out of India. Most of the wealth that the British have acquired stems from India, which itself has a long history. They wanted to do the same thing in Iran. In other words, they planned to start somewhere small, gradually build on that, and take control of the country's economic resources. Once the economy was in their control, political control would be easy to acquire. That is exactly what the British had done earlier in India. In India, they first established the East India Company. Then, when they had moved forward, they took over the Indian government. India became a part of the British Empire, and that lasted for more than 150 years. They wanted to do the same thing in Iran. One of the first things that they did was the monopolization of tobacco, the tobacco movement, where a monopoly for growing, selling, and buying tobacco in the country was given to England. The government at the time, during the reign of Nasruddin Shah Qajar, did not realize what this meant, and they accepted it. However, Ayatollah Mirza Hassan Shirazi, a Shia Marja, a religious authority at the time, understood what was going on behind this issue. Ayatollah Mirza Hassan Shirazi issued a fatwa, a religious edict, that put an end to this agreement. This was the first thing that they did. The British plot failed. There were various successive contracts of this kind. One of these important contracts was known as the Vusur-ud-Dawla Agreement, the Anglo-Persian Agreement. In 1919, the British gave a substantial bribe to the Iranian Prime Minister at the time, Vusur-ud-Dawla, and this agreement was signed. The Vusur-ud-Dawla Agreement placed Iran's economy, politics, army, and governing system and everything else at the disposal of the British. This agreement was signed. However, one of our religious authorities at the time, Mata Modarres, stood up alone against this contract in the Iranian parliament, the Majlis, at the time. Modarres disclosed what was happening and did not allow the British to proceed, and he cancelled the contract. There were other contracts as well, such as the Reuters concession and others, but most of these contracts were annulled, thanks to the vigilance of Iran's religious authorities. Turning to the current events in the Gaza Strip, the leader said, "Today there are events taking place in Gaza that they would have done in Iran if they could have. The tragedy in Gaza, which is being carried out by the Zionists, and actually with the help of the Americans, is an unprecedented tragedy in history. In just 3 weeks, nearly 4,000 Palestinian children have been killed. The Islamic Ummah needs to know what is happening in Gaza. And needs to identify what is happening. The war in Gaza isn't a war between Gaza and Israel. It's a war between falsehood and truth, a war between the arrogant powers and faith. On the one side is the power of faith, on the other side is the power of arrogant powers. Of course, the arrogant powers gain power using bombs, military pressure, bombardment, and crimes. But the power of faith will overcome all of these. Our hearts bleed because of the suffering of the Palestinian people, especially the Palestinians of Gaza. We're upset. However, when we take a closer look at what is taking place, we realize that the victors in this battle are the people of Gaza and the people of Palestine. First of all, the people of Gaza have removed the false mask of human rights from the faces of the United States, France, England, and the like. They have disgraced them. The people of Gaza have been able to stir the human conscious world over. See what is happening in the world today. In Western countries, in England, in France, in Italy, And in the United States itself, people are coming out in huge numbers, and they're chanting slogans against the Israeli regime and in support of the oppressed Palestinians. Thus, you see, some fools come out and say Iran was behind the rally in the United Kingdom. No doubt the London besiege must have been behind this, or the Paris besiege must have done this. One of the many shameless actions of Western politicians and Western media these days is calling the Palestinian fighters terrorists. Is a person who is defending his own homeland a terrorist? Is a person who is defending his own country a terrorist? Back when the Nazi Germans occupied Paris during the Second World War and the French were fighting the Germans, when the French fighters were the French fighters described as terrorists? Why were they considered fighters and a source of pride for France, but you consider the Palestinian young people, the Palestinian youth, as terrorists? You are shameless. The people of Gaza and the Palestinian resistance fighters have exposed your lies. One of the important things that the Al-Aqsa storm operation did was to show how a small group, the Palestinians are less in number than they are, with little supplies and provisions, but with a firm faith and determination, was able to burn down and put an end to the result of many years of criminal efforts by the Israeli regime. The Palestinians showed how they were able to humiliate the world's arrogant governments. The Palestinians humiliated both the usurping Zionist regime and their supporters. This is a great lesson. Of course, the Zionist crimes shook humanity. I said this a few days ago, and I will repeat it again. There is more expectation from the Islamic world. Muslim governments should realize that if they don't help Palestine today, everyone must help in any way that they can. They have helped Palestine's enemy, which is the enemy of Islam and the enemy of humanity. Tomorrow, this same danger will be a threat to them. What Muslim governments must insist on is an immediate end to the crimes that are being committed in the Gaza Strip. The bombings must stop immediately. Muslim governments must block the exports of oil and essential services to the Zionist regime. And they must stop economic cooperation with the Israeli regime. They must raise their voices in all international assemblies and condemn Israel's crimes and atrocities in Gaza. This must be done without any hesitation. Where there is an Islamic assembly or an Arabic assembly, the talk of the few people who speak there mustn't be ambiguous or faltering. They must clearly condemn the Zionist regime of Israel, and they must unequivocally declare their support for the Palestinian people. Commenting further on the situation in the Gaza Strip and in Palestine, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The blow that the Zionist regime of Israel has received from Palestinian resistance is irreparable. I said this before and I will say it again now. This has gradually been revealed to the world. They cannot compensate for this. The Zionist regime is desperate and confused now. It is lying to its own people. The Zionist expressions of concern about their own captives or in the hands of the Palestinians is also a lie. The bombardments they're carrying out may kill their own captives as well. The fact that they're expressing concern for their own captives means they're also lying to their own people, and they're lying because they don't have any choice. The Zionist regime is bewildered, it is distressed, it doesn't know what to do. If it doesn't have America's support, the Zionist regime will definitely be crippled in a matter of days." Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The Muslim world must not forget that in this important, crucial matter, those who stood against Islam, a Muslim nation and the oppressed Palestinians, were the United States of America, France and Britain. The Muslim world must not forget this. They need to understand this in their dealings, in their calculations and analysis. They must not forget who is standing against and putting pressure on the oppressed Palestinians. Of course, we have no doubt that Allah's promise is indeed true. God's promise is true, and do not let yourself be upset by those who have no conviction. Do not let those who are uncertain about God's promise make you waver with their negativity. God willing, inshallah, the ultimate victory belongs to the Palestinians and the Palestinian nation. In final remarks, the leader wished God's mercy and blessings upon all those present.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, here is another thought-provoking saying for our guidance from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Live among people in such a manner that if you die, they weep for you, and if you are alive, they crave for your company.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, degrees of humility. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We understand that humility is the opposite of arrogance. We know that arrogance is highly disliked by Allah. We know that there are numerous verses and ahadith about humility and arrogance. The question one may ask is, are there any degrees to humility? Let's turn towards a saying of Imam Kazim alayhi salam to seek an answer. The Imam says there are degrees of humility. One of them is to understand one's merits and capabilities and to use them duly with a pure heart. A man like this should not behave with people in a manner which he dislikes for himself. He will repay bad deeds with good deeds, restrain his anger, and pardons men. And Allah loves the doers of good to others. So this is a narration of Imam Kazim alayhi salam in which he explains the degrees of humility. Just like we have degrees of iman, right, faith. Just like we have degrees of taqwa, right. When it comes to humility, some people are just bare minimum humble, you know. Some of their actions, they kind of indicate that they are humble people. Others are better than that. And in terms of some of their actions, they do other things that complement those actions and create this feeling of comfort for the poor, for instance, you know, comfort for other Muslims. And Muslims they feel welcomed to approach him to seek help, right? This is also part of being humble. So there are different degrees of being humble, which we should study more about and inshallah try to inculcate it in our lives. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing about the degrees of humility. How many times have we noticed that people's greetings with the poor are different from their greetings with the rich ones? Unfortunately, even in masjids, even in Husainiyas, even, you know, you go and attend a majlis of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, you see this happening more frequently than we notice, right? So this is very unfortunate. You know, this is a trait of the those who are the people of the dunya, ahlul dunya, that they look at somebody's wealth and then treat them based on their wealth status, right? In Islam, the respect of a believer is more than Kaaba, right? So now that respect is not dependent on his wealth or richness status, right? If anything, the respect of a mu'min is dependent on the level of taqwa he possesses, right? But unfortunately, in materialistic societies that we live in, things are upside down. We notice that people, they are respected because of the type of car they drive, based on the house that they possess, based on their job title, for instance, based on the number of degrees they have, based on their, I don't know, so many other factors like, you know, the type of phone, especially when it comes to youth, the type of phone that they're carrying, you know, so on and so forth. Divine values, unfortunately, have disappeared from our societies, even within Muslim circles, right? Imam Ridha alayhi salam says, the eighth Imam, anyone who greets a poor Muslim in a manner different from his greeting a rich one, Allah will be angry with him on the Day of Judgment. Look how explicit the Imams are in guiding us. So let's, inshallah, try to respect the poor, be humble in front of poor, and you know, those Muslims who are less fortunate, let's try to help them out and be respectful towards them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Abu Ramadan and his family in the Gaza Strip.
Part 2.
Because of the continuous heavy shelling and the fear of becoming a target, all family members rushed to the sheltering school, thinking that their whole house would be bombed at any moment. Because Gazans know that drone missiles are guided missiles of the F-16 fighters, which could destroy their house.
We're afraid that they bomb it and destroy it. We do not belong to Hamas or to Fatah, but may Allah protect them. We support everybody. All the Muslims are our children. My son and his wife were in the apartment during that. What shall we do?
They targeted the mosque while the prayers were inside. Mosques and churches did not survive the bombings. They destroyed everything and no one is safe. Why is that? Is it because we have what is their right? Or because we want to live dignified on our land and in our homeland like other nations? The right of this land is ours and they took it. Where is our land that they took?
Hey,
Inside the sheltering school, which houses tens of the expelled families from Al-Shuja'iyya and Al-Zaytun neighborhoods, people are living moments of waiting and fear. Some are watching the planes in the sky, while others are following the smoke coming out because of the continuous shelling in the Gaza Strip. Others could not enter the classes. They prefer to stay out in the corridors or the school square because the classes are crowded with women and children.
Four families live in one classroom. Our family, Al-Ghazali family, Al-Dahshan family, and Arafat family. There is no enough room in the refugee schools, but we should support each other.
My husband and I have three children. We are now in the streets. My husband and I sleep on one mattress. In this class, there are about 40 people, including children and elders, and the number keeps on rising.
The displaced families from the eastern borders of the Strip live inside the school. When the sunset is close, people start to make movements. Everyone is busy preparing the requirements to break their fast, gathering some food and drinks. The same as for Abu Ramadan and his family. To the sounds of explosions, the fasting people break their Ramadan fast. Some of them have their meals inside the classrooms, while others eat in the corridors because there is not enough space.
They have started bombing now. They will continue this the whole night. We could not sleep last night, and I'm still awake till now.
We took refuge at the UNRWA schools because they provide protection in wartime. We're not supposed to be bombed there. However, we may be hit in this UNRWA school. They fire random missiles and don't care what they are hitting.
There is a bombing every second. I was once going to the bathroom when a missile shrapnel fell next to me. My children have urinary incontinence because of fear.
After breaking their fast, the men gathered in a circle in the corridor. They started discussing what happened in the country.
They are killing children, women, and innocent people. They killed children from Shuhaiber family while they were playing on the roof.
Yes, I know them. Two girls and a boy.
They targeted them.
And they killed people who were fleeing from Al-Mansura.
What did they do? What was their fault?
70 people were killed today, but there is nothing to justify that.
They were children. What was their fault? We want to live like other nations, like the rest of the world. Every 2 or 3 years comes a new war, and they kill young men.
They creatively kill children and cut trees. They destroy buildings too. Are they humans even?
The whole world is silent.
If they want to be creative, they should send their soldiers man to man in the battlefield. It is not by using planes to kill children, women, and the old people.
What is the fault of those who are being killed? What is the fault of the children? Do children fire rockets?
They say that children fire rockets. So drone rockets cut the children's necks off their bodies because these children fire rockets.
Yesterday in Shuja'iyya, they bombed many houses. What was the people's fault? F-16 rockets destroy huge buildings upon their residence. Why?
Yes, Al-Bash family and Abu Kawar family, for example.
During the discussion, they heard the Al-Isha call prayer in Gaza, along with the sounds of the Israeli army's F-16 planes bombing everywhere. Despite their fear and horror, the men gathered in the school square to perform the Isha prayers, asking Allah to protect them.
Say, I seek refuge in the Lord of mankind, the King of mankind, the God of mankind, from the evil of sneaking whisperer,
who whispers evil into the hearts of mankind from among the jinn and evil men. God is great. God listens to the one who praises him. O Allah, we ask you to make the Mujahideen's shots true. O Allah, put horror into the corrupted hearts of the Zionists. O Allah, we ask you to bring their planes down, to destroy their tanks, and put fear in the hearts of their soldiers. O Allah, we ask you to paralyze their attack. Peace be upon the Prophet Muhammad and his companions. God is great.
After finishing the prayers, sounds of firecrackers and takbir were heard over the school. Everybody was smiling and was delighted in spite of the killing and destruction. Obviously, there was good news that spread after 450 martyrs and more than 3,000 injuries up until that day were the result of the ongoing war by the Israeli occupation of the Gaza Strip.
The Palestinians captured an Israeli soldier. I hope they capture another one tonight. This is victory for us. We will free all our prisoners and get all our demands with this soldier.
We did not want to imprison the soldier, but they themselves made us kidnap him. We did not want that from the beginning, but they made us do so.
After the celebration, there were more explosions and raids, but everyone went to sleep in the school. At dawn, Abu Ramadan woke up to start a new day with unknown surprises.
There is bombing and destruction every day. They have been bombing Al-Shaja'iyah neighborhood the whole night and everybody left it. There are many martyrs. Houses were destroyed and men, children and old men were killed. What life is this?
A new morning comes to the Gaza Strip, while the war of destroying houses on its residents continues.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. Thank you. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime forces are now regularly using weaponized drones and attack aircraft to target densely populated residential areas. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Israeli regime forces massacred at least 14 Palestinians in a deadly raid of the city of Jenin and its refugee camp in the northern occupied West Bank recently. Large numbers of Israeli regime forces invaded the refugee camp and the surrounding area with bulldozers and military aircraft, including drones and mounted snipers on the rooftops of buildings. The deadly Israeli incursion lasted 12 hours, during which Israeli regime forces fired live ammunition at Palestinians, and an army bulldozer destroyed roads as well as water and electricity infrastructure in the area. More than 20 Palestinians were injured, and the Zionist regime killed 4 children in Jenin and its camp during the raid. The Israeli regime army said its Kfar Brigade raided the camp, where they arrested people, found an underground tunnel where weapons were stored, and attacked armed Palestinians. The army said that it had killed 12, despite how 4 out of the 14 of those Palestinians killed in the camp were children. The army also said it had arrested members of Islamic Jihad, a resistance group, during the operation and found weapons. An Israeli drone-fired missile killed 5 Palestinians in the camp that morning, including 2 children. Lotfi Sayel Turkman, 12, and Qais Raed Doekat, 14, had serious shrapnel wounds and burns all over their bodies. According to Defense for Children International Palestine, they were transferred to hospital and pronounced dead on arrival. Israeli regime forces shot a 13-year-old boy from inside a heavily armored Israeli regime military vehicle from a distance of 100 to 150 meters. Mohammad Youssef Zayed did not go to school that day and instead went into Jenin to buy shoes. DCIP said Mohammad looked for a cab to go home but was unable to find one, and he was shot twice by Israeli regime occupation forces near the taxi station in Jenin, killing him. An Israeli sniper shot a 17-year-old boy from a distance of 200 to 250 meters, killing him. Ahmad Mahmoud Khalaf was allegedly carrying a weapon when he was shot. Massive funeral processions were held in Jenin and his camp recently. The Zionist regime forces are now regularly using weaponized drones and attack aircraft to target densely populated residential areas, stated Ayad Abu Ekhtiash, Accountability Program Director at DCIP. Israeli regime drone strikes in the occupied West Bank have killed 9 Palestinian children so far this year, while the Zionist regime has used U.S.-made Apache helicopters to fire missiles that killed 4 children.